history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you're from in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are men and women around you who have some pretty incredible stories to tell if you only take the time to ask and listen. We want to honor our veterans for their service to our country. We want to preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along that journey, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Today, I'm in Grand Junction, Colorado, on the western slope of the Rocky Mountains. Beautiful country. We're not far from the Colorado River, from the Colorado National Monument, from so many natural scenes to gaze at. But we're going to hear a story that involves some other parts of the country and a gentleman who grew up around these parts. 94-year-old Rex Rainey is our guest, served with the 45th Infantry Division in World War II. But I want to hear, Rex, what it was like growing up around here. You grew up in Fruta, Colorado, which is what, I guess the northwest side of Grand Junction?
Yeah, mainly west, a little north.
Really close to the Colorado River, or the Grand River as it used to be called.
Correct.
What do you remember about your childhood? What kinds of things did you do around here?
Well, I grew up on a farm, so I learned how to plow, disc, hoe, cut hay, thrash grain. We even drew sugar beets for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I also fed hogs for years because no market for our crops, so feed them to pigs and you could get a little cash.
So that's what happened during the Depression? There was no one to buy your grain?
Right.
Did you have much help on the farm? Did you have siblings that were working hard out there too?
Three brothers and four sisters. We all found out what farm work was like.
I guess so. That's a lot of farmhands. Do you remember, I know it's a long time ago, I mean we're talking 80 years ago, but do you remember as a young boy, as a teenager, having some big ideas or ambitions of what you wanted to do in life?
Yes. While I was in high school, I hoped to go to college and become an electrical engineer, but it didn't work out.
Well, and I think I read that you joined the National Guard before you finished high school. Is that right?
Yes.
And this is before America is in the war.
Yes.
What was the thinking there? Was that to help the family out?
Oh, chance to get a little bit more money, spending money, because they paid you for each drill. It was a chance to get to travel a little bit, because they went for, when I joined, 2 weeks each summer. You went to Camp West over by Denver or someplace. That was the first year, and then the second year we went to Louisiana for a month. Little experience.
Mm-hmm. Did it ever occur to you that a war might be coming along and that it might be more than a little experience and a couple weeks at camp?
That's a yes and no question. You were well aware of it, but you figured if there's a war, you was going to be in it one way or the other anyway. I enjoyed the National Guard.
December 7th of 1941. Do you remember where you were and how you got the news?
I was in Old Mexico. There was five of us having a good weekend. And when we came back across the bridge, the guard told us we'd better get in uniform and get back to camp. That Pearl Harbor had been bombed.
Mm.
It had been a pleasant night before in Old Mexico.
What was that like as a young man to hear that news and find out, uh-oh, now this is real?
Well, we was all supposed to be home by Christmas that year because we'd served our year.
So I imagine your training kicked into high gear now that America's at war. What kinds of things were you training to do personally?
I had gone into the National Guard as a lineman. That's when we were inducted. Then in Fort Sill, Oklahoma, where we first reported, I became a switchboard operator. When we moved to Abilene, I was made a corporal in charge of the switchboard and the linemen. Then I was made a sergeant in charge of the communications.
Mm-hmm.
That was it at that time.
Were you one of those who was eager to go overseas and get a piece of this, or you were in no hurry whatsoever?
Oh, for some reason, I wasn't in a hurry. We knew it was coming, and I think I wasn't in a hurry because my oldest brother, the day after Pearl Harbor. He went down and joined the Marines and was back in Los Angeles with 56 bullet holes from his waist down while we were stationed at Fort Devens, Massachusetts.
Mm.
And for some reason, I wasn't in a hurry.
I think we're getting a picture of what the reason was. Before you ever ship out, one of your brothers is already back from the war, and clearly his life's going to be a lot different with the injuries he suffered.
Right.
I could see how that would impact you. Before we move on with your story, how did that affect him for the rest of his life?
Well, I don't know how many operations he had. He was still in the hospital when I got back from the service, and I think I'd been home several months before he finally got out of the hospital.
Wow.
Could walk with a cane.
So here's a guy in his early 20s, and he's going to be walking with a cane the rest of his life.
Well, he was determined.
Mm-hmm.
I think he used a cane for 2 or 3 years and insisted life had to be different.
So he goes over early, gets wounded with the Marines, and you left for overseas a lot earlier than most of the World War II veterans alive today did. In fact, and a lot of people mistakenly think that's the first time that America made a landing in Europe. That's not the case. You were part of one earlier than that. But the first place you went with the 45th Infantry Division was North Africa?
Yes.
What was that journey like across the ocean? Had you ever been on a ship before?
That's the first ship I'd ever been on.
Uh-huh.
It wouldn't make sense to most people, but it took us 21 days of zigzagging. We saw how the Navy operates when they think there's a submarine in the area. I'd hate to tell you how many barrels we saw shoot off of a sub-destroyer, I guess they call them.
The depth charges to try to get the subs.
Yes.
Because as early as you went over, this is 1943, that U-boat threat in the Atlantic was still significant. There were a lot of Allied ships that were being hit.
That's right. Not all of them made it.
And I know, again, this is a long time ago, but if you can think back to that young man heading overseas and what was on your mind, was this something? I mean, you've already seen your brother get wounded, and you know that he's got a long battle.
Well, I've heard about him.
Right. You haven't seen him yet, but you got the news in the mail. Did you think you were going to come back?
Not really.
You'd come to grips with that. The likelihood was?
Well, I didn't think about that. After we'd landed at Iran and got the sea legs gone, and then we invaded Sicily, about our fifth day on Sicily, we'd had casualties before that, but that's the first time we had any KIAs. We got 5 that day, and it brought things home pretty fast.
Mm.
But we still had no doubts, and Sicily went pretty good. Then after that, we went to a place called Salerno, Italy. That's when you decided you better make the best of every chance you get, because you're not going to the States.
Mm. It was that grim.
When you call on white phosphorus shells to keep from being a KIA or a prisoner, you get a different perspective on life.
I can imagine. And I know this is not easy to talk about. And before we started, you told me that you've spent a lot of years trying to forget some of the things you experienced, and I don't want to take you anywhere that you don't want to go. And I so appreciate your willingness to help us understand what people like you went through so we have what we have today. What was your job in these landings, in these invasions?
I came in on the third wave in Sicily, caught up, and he said, the first thing I want you to do is get a Tommy gun and take my Jeep. And he said, we got about 300 prisoners I want you to take back to the first MP you see. That was my introduction to Sicily.
I guess so. Welcome to the war. So how did that go? How did that unfold?
Real good. I think the reason Sicily went so well, a lot of it, the Germans depended on the Italians to defend, and most of the prisoners were Italians. They were glad to wave the flag and come out. First MP I saw was a second lieutenant in an MP Jeep, so I flagged him down. And he told me I would have to take him back to the beachhead. Having been acquainted with him in Fort Devens, Massachusetts, I had my opinion of him, and I racked back to Tommy, and I said, sign for 300 prisoners, or you don't go further. He told me, he said, I'll have you. And I told him, fine. You tried it at Fort Devens, and you ended up in the MPs because he was assigned to a line company up there.
Of all the people you had to run into, huh?
Yeah.
So you left the prisoners with him?
He wrote me a receipt for 300 prisoners.
Moving on from there, you mentioned the landing at Salerno, and I was asking you what kind of duties or role you had at that point. Was it different there than it had been at Sicily?
Completely different. Normally, a sergeant major isn't on the line, but before we got off of Salerno, everyone but the cooks took frontline duty.
Mm-hmm.
You all became infantrymen. Cooks were busy doing things you didn't want to do.
Because the casualties were very high.
Lots of men lost there. Our battalion lost one platoon of Baker Company and a reinforced platoon of Charlie Company, where that some of us called on white phosphorus chemical mortars to stop the German advance on us so we could get out of that area.
At what point do you make that decision? Because the way you're describing it, it sounds like that's kind of a last resort.
Well, you've got some people captured. You got tanks and anti-tracks and half-tracks. They've got machine guns. You know you can't remain in that area. And we had a bank to climb, so you, human chain, you climbed on each other and one got up and then you helped the next. That's when you called on the white phosphorus, when you got on the bank and called so the Germans stopped.
Because if you didn't, you would have been overrun and you would have been captured or killed.
Correct.
How did you handle that? Because, I think of your age. I mean, you're what, 22 years old at the time?
Somewhere in that neighborhood.
Were you scared?
Tell you the truth, the soldier that tells you he was never scared, I wouldn't believe.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a different type of fear. It was I may be going down, but some of you are going with me.
Mm.
Well, that was my mentality. You don't go down without a fight.
And what were you armed with?
At that time, an M1.
One rifle?
Right.
And you already described what some of the opposition was. And are there enemy artillery shells coming in on your position, too?
Those German 88s are just as deadly as an artillery shell. But I think the Germans had crossed over the street from Sicily and were waiting there because they hadn't had full chance to regroup.
At this point, are you starting to come to grips with the death around you? Guys that you trained with or knew or were standing right next to that are getting killed?
You're well aware of it. That's where I decided to get as many as you can, and I guess I wasn't successful because I set my store at 70 Germans before they get me. I'm here, so I must not have got 70.
Well, and I'm sure there were plenty of times where they almost got you, and in one case, you were wounded. You're a recipient of the Purple Heart. We're going to hear about that. But were there some moments where you came really close that really got your attention?
Oh, well, we was on Salerno in defensive position. The tanks and half-tracks were coming down on us, and the report, I don't know for sure, but the report was the tanks were doing a half circle over a foxhole, and German soldiers were bayoneting them.
Mm.
And someone, thank goodness, had some power and called for air support straight from the front lines. The P-38 is not a popular aircraft, I don't think, but it sure earned the respect of a lot of infantrymen because they came in and they went down our line and came back. And something told me to set up in my foxhole in the back of it, and in my foxhole a 50 caliber slug lit. But they knocked out two tanks, and the rest of them and the half tracks all fled. So
That's why the Germans called that plane the fork-tailed devil, the P-38. So it saved your guys' lives there, those P-38s that came in, but nearly took your life. This is a friendly fire shell from a P-38. That landed how close to you?
Well, I was in the back of a foxhole, and it landed where my head had been. Because someone said, set up. And so I set up in the back part of the foxhole.
Like, and we're talking about a split-second decision.
Or less, yeah. just something.
If you hadn't moved, your head's disintegrated.
Right.
But you move, it hits right behind you. And you're not wounded at all?
No.
How do you explain that?
The good Lord looks after you.
I guess so. Is your heart pounding a little bit after something like that?
For a while.
And I think the rest of ours will keep pounding throughout our first commercial break. Rex Rainey, 94 years old, of Grand Junction, Colorado, is our guest today. You'll find a short video of him on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll hear more about his close calls with the 45th Infantry Division in Italy when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.